Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hello, I'm Larry Mealer, and today we take a look at woody ornamentals and we take a look at plant diseases. Laura Jull, Associate Professor and Extension Specialist for Woody Ornamentals at the UW-Madison Department of Horticulture. Brian Huddleston, Plant Disease Diagnostician with the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and of course with Extension as well. So really pleased to have Laura and Brian back, and we invite you to call in with your questions. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Brian, welcome back.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And Laura, great to have you back, too.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Thank you, Larry.
What's included in that category of wood, what you call woody ornamentals?
Well, woody ornamentals consists of trees, shrubs, woody vines, woody ground covers, evergreen trees and shrubs. Consists of a lot of things.
Yeah, a whole bunch. And when we talk about plant diseases, Brian, you deal with
pretty much anything. The only plant I really don't deal with is turf very much. So,
okay, so we stay away from the turf today for sure.
Yes, indeed. But we have, I know one call we're going to get. We'll see if my prediction is correct. But I've been having a lot of phone calls on a particular disease problem. So.
Aha! All right. Well, let's see, because we already have many callers online. Again, that number 800-642-1234, or shoot us an email at talk@wpr.org. And Jim Packard's getting some folks up online right now as we speak, as a matter of fact. The Plant Diagnostic Clinic, let's talk about that for a minute before we go to the phones. What are the services that are provided?
I'm housed in the Department of Plant Pathology, which is over on the west end of campus near the Babcock Dairy Store. And we basically, if you have a sick plant, you can bring in a portion of that plant or the entire plant. We'll take a look at it, try to diagnose what the problem is, and then we provide information on whatever that problem is and information on controls. So we do charge a small fee for that. Helps to support our operation.
Sure.
But we get all kinds of woody ornamentals coming into the clinic. In fact, most of our clientele are interested in ornamentals of one kind or another, and it's primarily trees and shrubs.
All right. Well, Jill and Racine has a question for you, so we'll go right to the phones. And Jill, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry and guest. I have a five-stamen tamarix. It's, the common name is Summer Glow. It's a big pink bush, and it gets 10 feet tall.
Sure.
Or 15 feet tall.
Mm-hmm.
I need to prune it. It doesn't look well.
And so your question is, how do I prune it?
How do I prune it?
All right. Well, what do you think, Laura?
Well, I know the plant. It's it's tamarix, which is different than our native tamarack, which is a tree. Tamarix is a shrub native to China. It has bright pink flowers in summer, and it's starting to set its flower buds right now for summer bloom. So I wouldn't prune it right now because you'll be cutting off some of the flower buds. I do want to mention to everybody that this plant is a horribly invasive weed in the western U.S., especially in the dry riverbed areas in Colorado and the western states where it has just taken over. I'm not a huge fan of the plant, not just because of the invasive potential. I've not seen it become invasive in Wisconsin. We have pretty wet weather here, and they prefer the dry, real dry weather. It is very drought tolerant, though. One of the reasons why I'm not a huge fan of the plant is, like you said, it does tend to get pretty leggy with age, and it does need renewal pruning. And I would wait till it's done flowering, and then I would remove some of the larger diameter branches back to the base of the plant. Since there's so few branches to begin with on tamarix, that you wouldn't be cutting tons off, but you would remove some of the taller ones back to the base of the plant, maybe one or two, and then let the new growth from the bottom come up. I do have an Extension X-Series fact sheet on how to properly prune. One is on how to properly prune deciduous shrubs, another one's on deciduous trees, and the third one is on evergreens. These are two-page fact sheets that are available on the Wisconsin University of Wisconsin Extension Urban Horticulture Team website, and they're listed under Garden Facts. And I will give you that web address. It's www.
No, no www on that one. It's just wihort.uwex.edu. So leave the www off the front.
So wihort.
Dot uwex dot edu. And if you do put the www on the front, you will get to a blank page. It will
really?
Give you an error message. Yeah, yeah. It doesn't forward.
I checked all these last night and they worked.
Yeah, that one oftentimes does not.
Okay.
All right.
I stand corrected, but look under Garden Facts.
Yeah, it's the first entry in the main menu. Just click on that and that'll take you to a table of all of our one-page fact sheets and look in the horticulture, general horticulture column, which is the third column right on the right.
So wihort.uwex.edu. And there you have it. Good luck, Jill. Thanks for calling. Dan, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hey, thanks. Good morning. Hey, I've, on my walks recently, the last couple of weeks up in Door County and in central Wisconsin, I've noticed on some branches of some of the bushes and this webby nest configuration. I mean, I've seen up in Door County 60 on one walk on various bushes, full of maybe dozens of, made by dozens of caterpillars, yellow and black caterpillars.
Yep. That's 10 caterpillars?
Eastern 10 caterpillar. It's nasty looking, isn't it?
Oh. It's terrible, yeah.
Yeah, it's it's more of a human fright than anything else. I go to the dog park here in Madison, Token Creek Dog Park, and some of these trees are just loaded with it, and the caterpillars come out and they feed on the leaves. They eat the leaves, and then they go back to their nests where they actually poop in their nests, and their nests are full of, it's called frass. It's gross. And then they get long, and some people want to spray pesticides for them. You don't need to spray pesticides for them. In fact,
even worse, they'll want to cut down the tree.
Want to burn it. It's like, don't burn it. You'll be burning your tree. Not a good thing to be burning the bark on a tree. Best thing to do, I know it sounds gross, but you could get your aggressions out, is put on a glove, grab hold of the nest and pull it out of the tree, and then put the worms that are in that nest, the whole kit and caboodle, in like a bucket of soapy water with maybe a little rubbing alcohol added, and they will die. Some people put them in kerosene. Then what do you do with the kerosene? I rather just use soapy water. And
people who like to use the kerosene like to light it afterwards, which is not something we recommend. So definitely soapy water will work.
But they're not going to kill the tree.
No, but they do defoliate. I mean, they do eat a lot of foliage. In fact, the cherry I was looking at dog park yesterday was over half defoliated it had like five nests on one tree. It's not life-threatening, and pesticides don't need to be sprayed. One thing to look for back earlier, before they start coming out, is the adult will actually ovodeposit eggs into, it'll make a slit in the twig, and it will lay eggs, and it will be a swelling on the twig, very small swelling. And as spring approaches, that swelling on the twig gets bigger, and as it gets bigger, the eggs hatch, and there comes the larvae. It's best to catch it when the larvae are really small, because when they get big, that's when they get creepy.
And also when they do a lot of
feeding. Is this an infestation? Is this something we have to worry about for the future? Is it something we should?
It's a native insect, as far as I know.
Yeah, you'll see some level of this particular insect every year, so just, it's best if you've seen it on particular trees in the past to just watch and try to catch it very, very early, as Laura said. The earlier that you catch it, the less likely you're going to see serious defoliation from the insect.
And it likes plants in the rose family. It really loves cherries, plums, crab apples, hawthorns, calorie pears. That's its favorites.
Okay. There you have it. Dan, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And Jim and Shatek, we're on to you now. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Larry. I've got a smoke bush, and the flowers are all wilting.
When did you plant it?
Oh, this has been, it's probably 10 years old now. It's done this the last 3 years.
Yeah. Do you see branches dying on that particular shrub? It's just
wilting.
And it's just the flowers. I mean, I've been reading about verticillium wilt, but I don't seem...
That's what we think.
Yeah, but I don't seem to see any other indication.
Okay. Usually if you had verticillium wilt, I would expect entire branches to wilt and die back.
No, just some, you know, little internal ones that are...
Mm-hmm. Any, have you been watering it on a regular basis?
No.
Yeah, have you had plenty of rain, or do you...
Yeah, it's a little dry here, but not too bad.
Okay.
They're pretty drought tolerant. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
One thing with smokebush, they flower in the summer. I personally haven't seen flowers yet on them, but they could be starting to come. Usually the flowers themselves are actually kind of yellow and not very showy. What's the showy part of smoke bush is the hairs on the pedicels, which is the stalk.
Yeah, but they don't get hairs after they wilt.
No. Have you noticed any type of insect damage?
That was no. Next okay.
That's I've got one in my hand here that I picked off. I can't find any insect or anything in the stem or anything either.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Because it sounds like something's chewing on your stems and might be girdling the ends of the branches.
Yeah, that's kind of what we had thought, you know, talking earlier with somebody. But since you guys were on today and I just started today to wilt off. They've been, you know, standing up nice and tall and then just some of the branches are just wilting over. Sure. The other thing I have is it's right next to a black walnut.
Oh.
But I can't find any indication that the smoke bush and the black walnut are...
I would bet.
That's probably what the problem is.
We do have a fact sheet on that Urban Horticulture Team website under Garden Facts, and it's called Black Walnut Toxicity.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I don't have it in front of me, but I'm not sure if smoke bush is sensitive or not. I think it might be.
Yeah. It may or may not show up on that particular fact sheet. I was involved in writing that one, and what we did, because there's not a lot of real direct research on whether or not particular plants are susceptible to walnut toxins, so what we did was kind of perused lists from various educational sources to see what plants consistently came up as either tolerant or susceptible. And so that's the basis of the list that we have on our fact sheet. If we have conflicting reports for a particular plant, it doesn't show up in either column. So if you don't see smokebush on that list, that's probably because some people have reported it as tolerant and others as susceptible. But definitely if people are seeing possible susceptibility, I'm thinking that could very well be what the problem is, and likely that problem is only going to get worse as the walnut tree develops and gets bigger.
Oh, the walnut tree's well developed.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I'll take a look here too. I've got some information here on black walnut and what plants are resistant to it. So we'll take a look and see what we can come up with.
Yeah, I've got my own list too.
I got to believe it's a black walnut.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, it sounds the symptoms.
Like it could very well be.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling, Jim. Bob and Spooner, we're on to you now. Hi, Bob.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have planted some Ms. Kim lilacs probably about 15 years ago on our back lot line. Now, the ones in the center have done really well, and I've replaced one on the western end of the row. You know, it just wasn't doing well and, you know, died out. And now I have one on the eastern end of the line, and that one, you know, it has some leaves this spring, but, you know, very few, and it's just not doing it as well as the other ones. And I'm afraid I'm going to have to replace that. Any ideas? You know, I haven't pruned the flowers off the last couple of years to, you know, encourage more flowering. And this year I haven't fertilized, so I don't know those impact.
Yeah, have you seen any branch dieback in these particular shrubs again?
It's just not, you know, it's not as tall, it's not as full as the other, the adjacent Miss Kims.
But it seems to be leafing out relatively uniformly across the canopy?
No, this one is not leafing out. You know, there's some leaves on it, but, you know, in the last 2 or 3 years I've noticed that it just hasn't been doing as well as the other ones.
The two problems that I commonly see on Miss Kim lilac are verticillium wilt, which we touched on when we were talking about smokebush. This is a fungal disease. The fungus is in the soil, gets into the plant, and gets into the water conducting tissue and blocks it off. And the typical symptom for that is kind of a sectional dieback. in the shrub. So you get sections of branches that will wilt and die, and then another section that will wilt and die, and eventually the entire shrub will die. The other common problem, and it doesn't sound exactly like what you're seeing on your particular plant, the other common problem that I see on Miss Kim are root and crown rots. And again, these tend to be fungal diseases. There's several different fungi that can be in the soil that will infect the root system and the crowns of the plant, cause decay of the tissue to the point where the plants really aren't transporting nutrients and water very efficiently from the root system up to the upper parts of the plant. And that can cause a lot of general stunting, yellowing of leaves, some leaf drop, but usually relatively uniform across the canopy. And it may be that you're dealing with that particular problem. Unfortunately, if you have a crown rot like that, I would not recommend putting another Miss Kim back into that particular site, because basically it means that you've got particular variants of these root rot fungi that are well adapted to infecting Miss Kim lilacs. And you're probably going to have the same problem over and over again if you replant. So you really should probably look at planting some other type of non-related shrub in that particular site.
Any recommendation, you know, of a flowering shrub? It's on our, we back up to the park, and I just would like to have, you know, some privacy.
Yeah.
The first thing you might want to do is just, you might want to get a sample into us just to verify that you really are dealing with a root rot issue and not verticillium, because my recommendations would be very, very different depending upon the particular pathogen that might be involved. So if you're interested, I'm going to give you a website where you can check out how to send in a sample, or you can actually get a sample in through your county extension office. It's probably the easiest way to do it. My lab is actually a support lab for the county extensions. County offices around the state. Laura was suggesting maybe a hydrangea, but I've never gotten verticillium out of that particular plant, but I'd have to do some digging to see whether it's listed as a host or not. Again, it really depends upon whether we can find any verticillium or not in whatever you would send us. If you had a root rot problem or a crown rot problem, then before you plant something else in the area, I would really take a look at the soil that you have in that area. Is it relatively heavy? By any chance?
Yeah.
A lot of clay?
Correct.
Yeah. You
know, some loam, but the majority of it is clay.
Then I would suggest adding some organic material to that to kind of improve the drainage characteristics of that particular soil, because we tend to see an increase in root and crown rots when there's a lot of soil moisture. So if you've got a wet area or a soil type that tends to retain excessive moisture, the root rots are more likely in that situation. So you definitely want to prepare that site before you put another shrub in the area.
Does water percolate there? I mean, does it kind of puddle and not drain real well?
It's on, like I said, back up to the park, and there's sort of a minor swale. In fact, one corner in the next year or two, I'm probably going to turn it into a little rain garden type.
Lilacs are really sensitive to poor drainage. Lilacs and cherries are two very sensitive plants to poor drainage. And if there's puddling water there at all, I would not recommend planting a lilac back in there. I'd plant something that's tolerant to more wet soils. And I actually do have a publication on that. I'm sorry, I keep plugging my publications.
That's good.
I don't get any kickback check for this. That'd be nice.
Don't we wish.
Yeah. The one I have out now is called The Effects of Flooding on Woody Landscape Plants. It is on the Learning Store. The website is, there's no www, it's just http learningstore.uwex.edu. That's http, and then what is it, the
colon
forward slash learningstore, that's one word, .uwex.edu. And there's a number of publications on that website, and one of which that I did is the flooding. It's not just the effects of flooding on woody landscape plants, but also lists plants that are very sensitive to flooding, as well as plants that are tolerant to wet soils. So if you're interested, you could find that on the web.
Just type flooding in the search line, and it should pop it up.
Yep. Good luck. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate it. Laura Jowell and Brian Huddleston are guests here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Net. Larry Mueller, Jim Packard answering our phones today, our producer, and our guests, Laura Gell, UW Extension Horticulture Specialist. She specializes in woody ornamentals. Brian Huddleston, plant disease diagnostician with the UW-Madison and UW Extension. So happy to have him with us. Call us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Let's go to Denise in Lamira next. Hi, Denise. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you. We have scale on all of our willow trees, and one of them, it's like, it's gross. I bet you 90% of the tree is turned white with this scale. What can we do about it?
Sounds like it might be cottony maple scale.
Could very well. I don't know if it goes to that particular
yeah,
host
I don't
or
know
not,
if it goes
but
to
it's
willow, but...
something similar, something of that ilk.
Yeah.
What can we do about it?
Well, with scale, one of the best times to treat is in the dormant season using dormant oil sprays, which are very safe. They basically smother the scale insect. As the temperatures increase, you don't want to use those above 50 degrees. As the temperatures increase, there's products called horticulture oils that are more refined. They're not as thick. And I'm not sure if it's too warm yet to spray those. Usually, I think it's above 70 or I'm not quite sure what the degree temperature-wise where you can't spray those anymore.
What you might want to do with any of the oils is do a pretest.
Yes.
So take a little bit of the material and spray it on a portion of the plant. And, you know, you're probably going to get some on the leaves. And that's where I really have concerns about
right.
the oils. Particularly if it's high. Yeah, it'll cause some burn if it's too hot or if the oil is too thick or right. too heavy a weight. So spray just a little bit, wait about 24 to 48 hours. If you see a lot of burn, then it's probably too warm to make the application.
Okay.
That's for smothering the insect. There's another time to treat for scale, and it's the crawler stage. And that's kind of a weird term because they're so tiny, it's hard to see them. But what happens is that scale covering that you see right now underneath is an egg mass, and when those eggs hatch or eclose, the crawlers come out and travel down the stem. They feed and they themselves eventually form a hard covering and become more the hardened or soft or hardened scale. There's two types of scale insect. At the crawler stage, that's a time that you can also treat for scale, but it has to be timed exactly when the crawler stage is out. And that really depends on the specific type of scale insect you have when that crawler stage occurs. I would probably send a sample to Phil Pelletieri.
Yeah, get it in through your county extension office. What county are you in?
Dodge County.
Dodge County, Matt Hansen is your ag agent who deals with horticultural issues as well. He's a very good agent, and he can help you out. He may not be able to identify exactly what insect it is, but he can get a sample into Phil Pelletieri, who's our insect diagnostician, and then Phil can give you more specific recommendations.
Mm-hmm. If it's a hardened scale, spraying pesticides this time of year might be ineffective because a lot of times, like the armored scales, like magnolia scale and some of the other armored scales, pesticides have a hard time penetrating it versus the soft scales like cottony maple scale, which is very soft. It does look like cotton on the plant. It's tiny, but you can really see it. It sounds like you might have that, but I'm not sure if that particular scale insect gets on willows. One question I did have, is this a shrub or a tree?
It's like five willow trees, and one is like 90% covered.
Wow. You probably, you know, have it identified by Phil. Something that big, I would personally hire a professional certified arborist. And when I mean certified, they're certified by the International Society of Arboriculture, or ISA. That's a test that people have to pass. They actually have to know something about all aspects of tree care. I'm a little leery of having, you know, just anybody out of the phone book come and spray my trees. ISA certified arborists typically know what they're doing, and they will apply the most effective treatment. Because scale, high enough populations like you currently have can kill a tree.
Kill a tree, yeah.
And if you're interested in contacting a certified arborist, you can go to the Wisconsin Arborist Association website, and they have a kind of a searchable list that you can tap into. Yeah. And it's www.waa-i-s-as-in-sam-a.org.
I bet if you typed in Wisconsin Arborist,
you'll find that as well.
Yeah, it's a great website, and you can go under Certified Arborist for Hire.
Mm-hmm.
And under Certified Arborist for Hire, you can search by county as well as what you're looking for. If you want insect and disease control, you can click that box, search by county, and it'll come up with a list. And since you're in Dodge County, there's a number of people in your area.
Yeah.
But
good luck.
Get the insect identified first. That way you know exactly what you need.
Thanks a lot for calling, Denise. Appreciate your call. I have an email from Dennis in Fort Atkinson who says, this year our established bridal wreath bush, Van Hoot spirea, has become very thin with many stalks apparently dead and only a few flowers. Should we cut it back, feed it something?
Okay, with Van Hoot spirea, it's an old-fashioned plant. They're in full bloom right now here in this part of the state, and absolutely gorgeous plant and flower. It's just dripping with white flowers. The fact that it's getting thin and sparse, it may need some rejuvenation pruning. I definitely would remove the dead branches now, cut those out. It will come back from the base. Do not shear Van Hoot spireas, or anything flowering for that matter, because you're cutting off the flower buds and you're ruining the natural form. It has a nice vase-shaped like form, and by shearing them into, as I call, the meatball landscape, is not an effective way to prune. But yeah, I would remove the dead branches right now. You may have a disease, and I'm not sure what diseases get on Van Hoot.
Well, there are some canker diseases that you could potentially have problems with. The canker disease is typically a fungal disease, although it can be bacterial, but I would expect fungal on this particular host, and they infect branches and girdle them and will cause branch dieback. What I would suggest that you do is go through, if you're going to prune out those old branches, go through, prune out all the dead branches first, and then if you are going to be pruning any of the branches that are still alive, then I would disinfest your tools before doing that. And what you can use is get some rubbing alcohol or a can of something like Lysol spray, and you can just spray the tools until they drip and let those air dry. If you're dealing with one of these fungal pathogens that can cause cankers, you can pick the fungus up on your pruning shears and move it from branch to branch, or even from tree to tree or shrub to shrub as you're pruning. The other thing that might more generally cause some branch dieback in a shrub again would be root rots, which we've talked about before. And again, if you are concerned about either one of those, you can get a sample into my clinic through your county extension office, and I can take a look and see if there's any indication of a problem and provide some recommendations for you.
Very good. Let's go to Kevin in Deerfield next. Hi, Kevin.
Hi. I have several silver maple trees, and there's some other, I don't know if they're Norways or hard maples. I didn't plant them in the yard, and all of the silver maples are getting blackened, crinkled leaves, and a lot of them have some galls on them.
But you're getting some knowing nods here from our
guests. You get the prize today, because I mentioned the question I was sure I was going to get today, and yours is the question that I was waiting for. We've been seeing a lot of maples, a lot of silver maples, but maples in general getting a lot of very black leaf spots. And what we're probably dealing with is a combination of diseases. Early in the week, when I was first getting calls on this, I was saying, oh, it's probably anthracnose, but get me a sample in so I can take a look. And I had a couple of people submit samples, looked at those today, and it looks like it's more than one disease that we're dealing with. It looks like there's anthracnose, which is probably our most common fungal leaf disease on things like maples and ash and oaks. We see this pretty much every spring. But I'm also seeing what appears to be something called Venturia leaf blotch, which this is just another fungal disease. We tend to see Venturia diseases more on apples. If you've ever heard of apple scab, that's a Venturia disease. But there are variants of that disease that can occur on maples. I also had a sample of an aspen that came in that had a Venturia leaf disease as well. The control for all of these is pretty much the same thing. It's basically don't panic. These are typically not life-threatening diseases. They're typically very cosmetic. And the biggest thing that you can do as a homeowner to try to prevent them from recurring is to make sure you do really good leaf cleanup this fall. So remove any of those diseased leaves, any of the leaf litter at all, quite frankly, and either compost it really well, that is heat it up, so that it decays, or bury it or bag it up and get it to a local composting place in Madison. We have a lot of options for bringing materials to the city for composting. And if you do that, you'll have less of the fungus in your yard that's likely to cause a problem next year. I think part of the reason we're seeing a huge problem with these leaf diseases this spring is that we've had a relatively cool spring. And we've had a fair amount of rain in many areas as well. And that combination of cool and wet is just perfect for these leaf fungi to get established. If you would happen to have a tree that would defoliate from these sorts of diseases and do it on a regular basis, so several years running, then you might want to consider a fungicide treatment regime. Again, on a larger tree, I think you need to call in a certified arborist to deal with that particular problem. But I usually do not recommend fungicide treatments in most instances for these leaf diseases. And quite frankly, at this point in the season, it's way too late to be applying anything. So definitely don't let somebody come and say, oh, yeah, I'll spray your tree for this, because quite frankly, it will do absolutely no good. And we do have a fact sheet on anthracnose, actually three versions with pictures of the disease on various types of trees. Again, they're available at the Wisconsin Horticulture website, wihort.uwex.edu. Just click on Wisconsin Garden Facts, and they'll be in the left-hand column. But very, very common problem. I've had probably half a dozen or more calls, and many of them from county agents who themselves have had a half a dozen or more calls. So lots of this out there all over the state.
All right.
Well, very helpful. Thank you very much.
You're quite welcome.
Thanks, Kevin. Gene in North Branch, Minnesota, we turn to you now. Hi, Gene.
Hi. I planted evergreen seedlings last spring, and now about 25% are green, but they're not putting out new buds. Is there something I could do to help these?
Do you know what evergreen seedlings you planted?
I've got Norway pine, Scotch pine, and Black Hill spruce.
Okay, Norway pine is also known as red pine. What was the next one, I'm sorry?
Scotch pine.
Scotch pine and
Black Hill spruce.
Black Hill spruce. Anything else?
No.
Okay. With the pines in particular, when you plant them, they only grow one time of year, and it's right now. And the bud breaks at the very tips of the branches and produces what's called a candle. It's not a true candle, but it's called a candle because it's a stalk that where the needles have not elongated yet. And the stalk elongates, and then the needles are produced, and then it sets a terminal bud, and that's all the growth you get for this year. Okay, with spruce and firs, they also have some lateral buds as well as the terminal bud. It grows, it doesn't grow a candle per se, but they do elongate with the needles already there, and then it stops growing, sets a bud. So they're determinate type growth, meaning they have a bud, the bud breaks in spring, it produces new growth, elongates until June, and then it sets in the summertime the terminal bud, which will be then break next year and produce next year's needles. You cannot get it to continuously flush. That's not how these evergreens grow.
Are you getting any growth at all?
Very little. Some of the seedlings are doing fine.
Okay.
But on those look like they're dormant.
Okay, on the trees that where you're not seeing any bud break at all.
On some of, I'd say maybe 20% there is.
Okay.
Is no bud break.
If you haven't seen any, and where are you in the state? I'm sorry?
Minnesota.
Minnesota. Okay. I'm not sure where in Minnesota you're located, but.
East Central.
Okay. East Central. It should be starting to break by now. If you don't see anything by mid June, then your plants may just either be in shock or they may have died over the winter. Seedlings are a little bit temperamental. Do you notice that bud there? Has there been any animal feeding?
No, I don't believe so.
Okay.
Any signs of swelling or anything of that sort at this point?
I can't recall if I saw anything.
Okay.
So hang on till about mid-June, and if nothing's popping by mid-June,
those may be a loss, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
Probably
yeah.
A loss. And thanks a lot for calling, Gene. Appreciate your call. Bob in Rochester, Minnesota. We move to you now. Hi.
Hi, Larry. Love the show. This is why I tune into Wisconsin Public Radio.
Thank you.
Two questions. One's about hydrangeas. I have a few on the north side of my house. They don't ever bloom. They're the endless summer variety. and they grow green. They're beautiful when they're green, but I don't ever get flowers.
Okay.
Where are you at in the state again?
Rochester, Minnesota.
Okay, yeah. You're really pushing the hardiness on that. I know the plants came out of Bailey Nursery in St. Paul, Minnesota, and they swear that they're zone 4 hardy. I've heard from just way too many people on Green Bay, central part of Wisconsin, even La Crosse area, where there's never flowered. It produces its flower buds on new wood as well as old wood. So technically, it's supposed to, as it leaves out in the spring, it's supposed to flower in the summer, and it's supposed to be reliably hardy. Now, here in Madison, the ones at the Arboretum bloom just fine, and we have no problems with it. But I would consider it more of a zone 5 plant, even though the literature says zone 4, zone 4 in very protected locations. So that could be potentially what's happening, is the flower buds just, they just were killed, and it's not producing it. Second of all, since it's supposed to produce flower buds on new wood, I'm wondering if what you got wasn't Endless Summer, and it was actually a different cultivar. I have seen them mislabeled in garden centers, so that's could be a possibility. But you also said you had a second question?
Yeah, the second one was, and I don't know if you can speak to it, but like figuring in wood. So, you know, like you might have burls and walnuts, or fiddleback and maple, and I can take that off the air, but I was just curious what you have to say about that.
Or what causes it, you mean? Or
what causes it, exactly?
What causes a burl?
There can be a variety of disturbances in the wood that can cause those sorts of odd growths. And, you know, I've seen some that have been induced, quite frankly, I think, by herbicide damage. And I think sometimes it's a wound of some kind. There is a, if you're talking about something like a cherry, we do have a disease called black knot. And I've seen examples of that disease that occur on main trunks where you get a burl that's formed. Those tend to be quite valuable if you have them on your trees. Woodworkers just love them. I had a probably about a 4-inch diameter one on a cherry log one time that somebody was using as a demo up at the farmer's market and got offered $250 for the log because they wanted to make a bowl out of it. So, like I said, a lot of different reasons why those burls can form.
I've seen them on maples, and sometimes it's due to just an overgrowth of cells. And, you know, I'm not a forester. I don't know the exact definition of one, but they can create the most beautiful pieces of artwork.
Absolutely gorgeous. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Laura Jowell and Brian Huddleston, our guests on this edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mealer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you have a question as we talk woody ornamentals and plant diseases of all kinds, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. Sue in Chenequah has a question about a boxwood. She emailed in, "This winter our boxwoods took a hit. It's more brown than green. Any way to save these, or should we just go ahead and replant the 10 that we have?"
To me, that's a question of aesthetics, quite frankly. If it looks ugly to you, remove it.
Yeah.
Yeah. With boxwood, I saw a lot of damage on boxwood this year, a lot of winter burn, and stuff that's supposed to be winter burn resistant. Some of the newer Green Series cultivars of boxwood had a lot of winter damage on it this year. Winter burn means that one side of the plant, predominantly the one that's facing direct winter winds, like the southwest, west, northwest side of a plant, got direct winter winds, and the plant basically the foliage dried out. The ground was frozen, the plant wasn't well hydrated going into winter, and it just desiccates or dries out the foliage. It's common also on evergreen rhododendrons as well as evergreen hollies.
And on yews.
Yews, yeah, sorry. So best thing to do is to prune out that branch. The foliage is dead. It's going to look awful. I'd prune it out. You're going to have a hole, basically. With boxwoods, it will fill back in slowly, but it will. If it's severe enough where it really disforms the plant, you might want to rip it out and plant a different one.
Yeah.
You could also, in the wintertime, or before winter, in late fall, you could try burlap wraps around the plants to prevent the winter burn. But I always say the best way to help avoid winter burn is to water your plants even into fall, making sure the plants are well hydrated going into winter. Don't flood them, but don't let them get real dry. Apply mulch, but keep it away from the base of the plant. No mulch volcanoes that will kill plants real quick. And just make sure that it's a moist but not wet environment going into the fall, into the winter.
One other comment from my perspective, I have seen a lot of the winter burn. The other thing I have been seeing a lot of on boxwood, I shouldn't say a lot of, I've seen on boxwoods, and if you would start to see branch dieback more midsummer, then I would worry about this verticillium wilt that we talked about before.
It's on boxwood.
Yeah, I've recovered it a couple of times from boxwoods. And the other thing that we have a problem with oftentimes when we have the winter burn, there's a little fungus called Volutella that will come in. And I think of it more of an opportunistic sort of pathogen, but it can get into that winter burn tissue and can cause some additional dieback as well. And again, good pruning just to remove those about four inches below where you see the last of the dead tissue is probably good for pruning.
One last quick question. Do you have dogs?
The person, that was an email.
Oh,
it was an email. I'm sorry. One thing I've seen on my neighbors is their dog likes to visit a certain boxwood every day, and they have lots of dead branches, and it's due to
the dog. But this guy has 10 trees, so...
Yeah, and I've also seen actually a lot of what looks like small animal damage on boxwoods. I see a lot of areas right near the base on certain branches where the bark has been stripped away, and I think that's probably feeding damage.
Yeah.
Let's go to Susan in Milwaukee. Hi, Susan.
Hi. My question is basically for Brian, but I guess the rest of you can chime in if you can help. I've been growing bee balm in pots on my patio for the past 2 years. And around July, they get a powdery mildew.
Yeah, lots of powdery mildew on bee balms.
Right. I'd like to know your formula for treating powdery mildew. I also need to know how to apply it and when to use it.
Mm-hmm. And again, if you forget this, we do have a fact sheet on powdery mildews where we have this particular recipe. It's a tablespoon and a half of baking soda, 3 tablespoons of a lightweight horticultural oil, and the Safers products are ones that we oftentimes recommend. But any really lightweight horticultural oil should be fine for this. And that's in a gallon of water. And mix that well. And then you need to spray this as a preventative treatment, so before you see any symptoms. So if you kind of chronically start to see powdery mildews on your monardas around the 1st of July, I would get out there the first week, second week in June, and begin the applications. And you need to make sure that you get good, even coverage all over the plant, upper surface of the leaves, lower surface of the leaves, and definitely get a nice uniform coverage with this solution. It's not going to totally take care of the problem, but it should provide you with some control. And it's a very low-impact sort of product rather than using some of the more commercial products that are available for powdery mildews that are a little bit tougher, a little bit less environmentally friendly.
Okay, well, once I use this, do I keep applying it or just
yes.
use it once? Or?
You'll probably need to reapply because this will weather quite easily, so it'll tend to wash off. And it's probably an application every 7 to 14 days, depending upon weather. And when we really see powdery mildews is when it's very humid.
Right.
We don't see a lot of them this time of the year because it's too wet. We're getting too much rain. Powdery mildews, if you have a wet leaf surface, the powdery mildew fungus doesn't like that. But once the weather dries, but we start to get that really muggy air, that's when the powdery mildews really go to town. And monardas are on my hit list of plants to get powdery mildews. Phlox is another one. And definitely things like zinnias, if you're talking about annuals, wow, they get nailed. And then typically on trees and shrubs, it's pretty much a cosmetic problem. Lilacs get lots of powdery mildew, but it doesn't really cause serious damage. Where I do see a lot of serious damage on woody ornamentals is on ninebark.
Okay.
It will actually cause branch tip dieback on that particular type of shrub or tree.
So it's 1.5 teaspoon or tablespoon?
Tablespoons. And then 3 tablespoons of the lightweight horticultural oil and a gallon of water. The other thing you might want to try doing is try thinning the plant a little bit because that'll increase airflow and will tend to reduce the humidity around the plant.
All right. I'll try that.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And David in Freeport, Illinois. We're on to you now. Hi, David.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call, Larry. I enjoy your program. Listen to it every week. What I've got, I got a special place along my house that I ordered a small fir tree with a graft on it. And it's kind of quite expensive. And since I've got this tree, I've done some research to find out that, hey, this tree may be adaptable to climate 5 rather than 4, which I think I'm in. And my question is, how can I keep this thing going without the climate change that's going to come off across the different numbers?
Okay. Do you know exactly what fir this is?
Okay. I can read. I read it. I've got it here, and I'm going to spell it for you.
Mm-hmm.
It's an A-B-I-E-S.
Yeah, A-B-S.
Okay. V-I-E-T-C-H-I-I.
I'm sorry. I missed that second word. V?
V-I-E-T.
Okay, vecchiai.
C-H-I-I. Pendula.
Pendula.
That's the grass.
Okay.
What the understock is, I have no idea.
Okay. It could be anything, any type of fir, as long as they're graft compatible. Aedes vecchiai is not one I'm very familiar with. I've heard of it in terms of it's not commonly sold around here.
Right.
And you're in Freeport, Illinois. Is that in the northern part of the state?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if you're in Zone 4. You might. Are you towards Chicago area?
Well,
no.
According to the weather maps or the zone maps, I kind of think that we're right on the line.
Yeah, I think you are too, between 4 and 5.
Right.
We do have Aedes vecchiai at the Arboretum here.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure if it's, you know, suffered any winter damage or not. Last couple of years, the snow has been so high, I can't get out there unless I have skis, and I don't have skis. But I would try it. Pendula means weeping.
Right.
So it's a weeping one, and it probably will need some space. I don't know how close you have it to your house, but I would give it enough space to grow.
Well, here's the problem. I planted it along the house, which was parallel to a wall.
Ugh.
Yeah, right. Well, then I find out that the plant likes morning sun, afternoon shade.
Okay.
So I relocated it to the edge of the woods, which provides that.
Okay.
Now, it's turned into an experiment now, and I'm wondering if I could cover that with straw or something throughout the winter to prevent any winter kill that would come about.
You mean the whole plant?
Yeah.
No, I won't. I do not recommend covering the whole plant with straw.
Okay.
The reason why is you're cutting down the air of movement. You increase your chances of disease and especially rodent
injury.
Yeah,
I was going to say.
Yeah, right.
They're going to come rodent in and hotel. Say, "Oh, this is a nice little house."
Yeah. Yeah.
And
yeah, right.
They're going to munch on your plant during winter time. So I don't recommend that. The fact that you got it towards the woods area, it's getting a little bit of protection back there.
Right.
It is a fir. They do require some sun. It's not a shade-loving plant, so I would make sure that it is getting sunlight. If it does on all sides of the plant, if it becomes shaded, it will start to thin out.
Okay.
And that would ruin the form.
Okay.
But I would try it. I mean, I'm glad you moved it away from the house because it's going to get too big against the house.
Right.
And not only that, but if it's against the house, you may have that overhang issue with the roof, preventing water from getting to the plant.
Okay.
And I've seen a lot of very nice conifers die that way, where they never got watered.
Mm.
So I just keep an eye on it. Make sure it's mulched at the base of the plant, but keep the mulch away from the trunk.
Yeah.
Do not do pile more than a couple inches on, and keep it at least 4 inches from the trunk of the tree.
Yeah.
It should never be touching the trunk.
What sort of soil do you have there?
Well, that's another problem. Where I initially had it planted was heavy clay.
Ooh, firs don't like that.
Root rot and crown rots, that's
exactly.
Probably the most common problem I see on firs.
Right.
Yeah, they like a sandy loam.
Since I relocated to the edge of the timber, I've got black loam.
Yep, that's what they like. They like a sandy loam or well-drained loam type soil.
Good.
I think that's what I've got now.
Well, good. And good luck. Thanks a lot for calling.
Well, thank you for your help.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Walter in Green Bay, hello to you.
Hello, yes. Good morning. I'd like to talk to you about my Japanese yews that were put in last year. They were beautiful, 5 of them in front of the house. And now they have a lot of brown on them, and many of the branches are dead. And I called the landscaper or the landscaper came out who put them in, and he said something like hard winter and fertilize them. I wonder if you could give me any more advice.
Okay. Got about a minute to do that.
Okay. It sounds like they went in last year?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It sounds like a couple things. Do you know what month they went in?
They went in in May.
May. Okay. They had plenty of time to get established. It sounds like winter burn injury. Is it facing west, southwest, northwest?
It's facing east.
It's facing east. That's actually where I would recommend planting them. It sounds like they might have gotten too dry and the foliage dried out. I would not fertilize it. That's an error to fertilize plants that are sick or have a lot of dead branches. The plant is stressed. The thing you want is to help the plant. I would water it. Most importantly, I'd prune out that dead material, kind of baby it along. If you did fertilize it, I would do it at a reduced rate. You're not trying to pump a lot of growth on it when they're stressed. You're trying to help the plant get a more established root system. Since you just planted it in May, I'd work on getting a good established root system first, then trying to pump a lot of growth on it.
And thank you very much for calling. Laura Jowell, Associate Professor and UW Extension Horticulturist, one of our guests, Brian Huddleston, Plant Disease Diagnostician with the Plant Diagnostic Clinic at the UW-Madison. Our guests here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mealer with my two guests, Laura Jowell, Extension Specialist for Woody Ornamentals at the UW-Madison and its Department of Horticulture, Brian Huddleston, Plant Disease Diagnostician in the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic at UW-Madison. He resides in the Department of Plant Pathology. So they come by every so often to talk with us about woody ornamentals and plant diseases. And I know we have questions coming up relating to pine trees and some problems associated with them. I think there's a question coming up on birch leaf miner. You may have a question about woody ornamentals, or you may have a question about plant diseases. And if you do, I hope you'll join us. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org. Back after the news. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our UW-Madison, UW Extension Specialist Laura Jowell and Brian Huddleston with us today to talk about woody ornamentals and plant diseases. Every one of our lines is filled, but give us a call in a few minutes. We'll get you on at 800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org. And well, with so many callers, let's go right to the phones. Linda in Black Earth, we'll go to you now. Hi, Linda. Thank you for calling.
You're welcome. So we're going to transplant some Norway pine from one piece of our property over to a property line. And on the other side is a farm field that's not being, you know, used organically. So I'm curious, should we be sensitive to how, what's the distance we should stay away from an active thing like that?
Well, are the farm next to it, are they spraying herbicides? Is that what
you're referring to?
Well,
yeah, they did this year.
What's the what are they planting there?
This year it's going to be corn, I think.
Yeah.
Atrazine.
Probably atrazine.
Yeah,
then.
And atrazine is a very common corn herbicide.
Yeah.
And it has a very long residual, and it can actually stay in the soil. Most herbicides don't stay that long, but atrazine has been noted. I've visited nurseries where they're burning bush actually were full fall color in the middle of summer and were dying back, and we couldn't find any pathogens. And then I asked the question, I said, what was this field before? And they said, oh, it was a corn field. And
right.
They used atrazine. If you're moving, first of all, one thing that kind of was a red flag, if you're moving red pine, or some people call it Norway pine, even though it's native to Wisconsin, I would not do it right now.
No, we're not going to do it now. We just have them growing behind, you know, we have a pine stand, and there's about 28, like maybe two-year-old, one-year-old, some of them little.
They're small.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're emerging their candles right now.
Right.
And I would wait until those candles have fully lignified, meaning hardened, actually physically hardened. The needles have completely elongated. I would probably wait until mid to late August to move them.
Sure, we could do it any time.
Yeah.
It's not
yeah.
imminent, but I was listening to the show, and it just occurred to me maybe that could be a problem.
It could be. Herbicide drift. I'm not sure how close you're wanting to plant it. Red pines will get big, obviously. They can grow, you know, 60, 70 feet in height. When
yeah, we have
mature.
Some. And we want that, ultimately, over there. Yeah. It's just...
And then you run the risk because the root system is going to be going out extensive distance away from the trunk that some of those roots are probably going to end up underneath or somewhere in that cornfield.
And I'm not real sure how sensitive red pine is to atrazine residue. That's kind of out of my area, but it's
how
something
to me. How far out do you think those roots go? Like, do we give it 30 feet, 50 feet?
It depends on the species, but there's been research that have shown that tree roots grow 3 to 5 times the height of the tree past the drip line. So if you have a 20-foot tall tree, 3 to 5 times past the actual tree, that root system goes out till. If you're looking at oaks, it can go even farther. With pines, they're not as an extensive root system as, say, an oak or a maple, but they go way past the drip line.
Okay.
Yeah, all right, thanks, great.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Mary in Oshkosh, your turn. Hi, Mary, thank you for calling.
Well, hi, thanks a lot. I planted a redbud tree or had a redbud tree planted in my yard last May, and I had it planted on time so that it went into flower, and leaves came out, but leaves came out on only about 50% of the branches. And so, you know, it stayed that way throughout the summer, and I watched it apprehensively through the winter and this spring. It budded again, and there is leaf growth on it again on the same branches. Last year, my concern was that I didn't seem to see any new growth, and the leaves stayed pretty small. And that's my feeling right now initially as well, although I realize leaves have only been out for about 2 weeks. Why would it only flower on half the branches? Mm-hmm. Should I be cutting those out? And since it has a 2-year guarantee after they planted it, I'm wondering if I should call them now to come and take a look at it or wait until next year.
Yes, definitely.
You have the exact same thing I have in my yard. My red bud is now a dead bud. And it's due to verticillium wilt, and I'll let Brian finish.
Yeah, that's redbud, unfortunately, is one of the very, very susceptible species to that particular fungus. It's a soil-borne fungus, although, quite frankly, if half of your tree was dead when you planted it last year, I suspect that it came from the nursery infected. And now what the issue is that you may have contaminated your site, the soil, with this particular fungus. And that means that I would not recommend putting redbud back in that particular site. You need to have something else go into that particular location that's not susceptible. And if you want a flowering tree, probably something like, well, a crabapple, I suppose, would be a possibility.
Or serviceberry.
Yeah, I was going to recommend serviceberry, but now I'm getting some reports that people are finding some verticillium on that particular tree. So I'm a little bit leery now to make a recommendation on that, but that was always one that I typically recommended as a possible replacement. Dogwood is another one that possibly could go in, although, again, I've had some reports of people finding verticillium on certain types of dogwoods as well. So you're really kind of stuck a little bit with a relatively limited number of trees that you can put in there, but definitely not a redbud, not a smokebush, not a Japanese maple.
Yeah. Not a lilac.
Not a lilac, but I mean, my three on the hit list are redbud, smokebush, and Japanese maple. I swear they see verticillium in the soil and they commit suicide.
Yeah.
The mention of lilac, do you mean lilac tree or lilac bush?
Either one.
Sensitive.
Okay, this is planted pretty close to a very big lilac stand. Have I just infected that?
Possibly. Again, I
might... Does it travel through the soil?
No, it will sit in the soil. It actually, the fungus tends to form little tiny rusting structures. They're called sclerotia, and those will survive in the soil for a while. And the concern is that as the root system of those lilacs grow, they may grow through a little patch of the verticillium in your soil and then become infected as they come into contact with the fungus. And we see this apparently occurring quite frequently. You'll have a tree that'll be perfectly healthy for 20 years and all of a sudden will come down with verticillium wilt. And our best guess is that just a portion of the root system ended up growing through a patch of the fungus in the soil.
Is there anything to do to the soil?
No, unfortunately not. It's really difficult to get rid of once you have it because the fungus not only infects trees and shrubs, it also goes to a wide range of herbaceous ornamentals as well. So typically, once you get it in an area, you continue to have it there because there's something or other that you're growing that potentially is susceptible. So that's very, very unfortunate. If you really want to know whether for sure you do have a problem with verticillium, what I would recommend doing would be to get a branch sample into my clinic. And again, you can do that through your county extension office. Definitely select dead branches that are as low on the tree as possible.
Oh, I've got those. I can talk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that are at least a half an inch in diameter or larger.
And
if you've got branches that have just wilted or just started to lose their leaves, those would be even better than the ones that were dead last year because we want slightly fresher material to work with.
Would a fresh branch be worth sending?
You certainly could send that as well. I do typically like things that are either starting to wilt or just have recently wilted. That's the best material for recovering this particular fungus.
Okay, so, all right. And where would I send something like that?
Are you here in Dane County? Or
Winnebago.
Winnebago. You could take it to the county extension office in Oshkosh.
Okay.
And Nick Crawford is your county agent there, and he can help you get it mailed down to Madison. Just let him know that you and I talked on the radio.
And your name?
I'm Brian.
Brian Huddleston. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, all just right. Tell him the disease clinic. He'll know who you're talking about.
Okay. I have an email here from Rebecca who wonders if you have a publication that would suggest shrubs tolerant of shade, walnut, and beneficial to birds.
Okay, that's a good question. There's no one that has all of those in one, but there is a publication that was done many years ago by Scott Craven and some other people. It's before I got here, on plants that attract birds. It is available on the learningstore.uwex.edu website. The next question was black walnut.
We do have our fact sheet, which is available. There's also a full-blown bulletin, again, that would be available at learningstore.uwex.edu. Just type in walnut in the search line. You'll find that very easily. But we do list trees and shrubs that we consider tolerant on our fact sheet as well.
Mm-hmm. And the last one was shade. I don't know of a shade one. We currently don't have that. That's to be done.
That's a good idea to do one, though, on that. So
there you have it. Darlene in Mount Horeb, it's your turn. Hi, Darlene.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question, I think, is kind of similar to the last caller, but a different plant. We planted a Freeman maple about 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
We planted it mostly because we have a Norway maple that we thought was kind of on its way out, and so we planted this not terribly close, but in the same area, so that we thought when the Norway maple died, we'd have something to replace it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was doing fine until last fall. I probably was a little suspicious because it dropped its leaves a little sooner than it should have. They didn't get a nice fall color. They kind of fell off green. And this spring, it's not leafing out like it should have. The leaves are mostly at the ends of the branches, the smaller branches, the smaller twigs along the branches inside don't have any leaves on them. And I just wondered if maybe the Norway maple is sucking so much moisture out of the ground that maybe that was the problem. Do you have any ideas?
Did the tree fully leaf this spring and then lost leaves, or did
it just never fully leafed out.
Okay, and when did you plant this again?
Oh, about 5 years ago,
okay.
And it was doing great.
Yeah, so it's established. That's interesting.
Right, oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
If it was a new tree, I would say it's probably under severe transplant drought stress.
Yes.
Yeah, no, it did very well for about 4 years.
Hmm.
Okay, one thing, did you physically plant it?
Yes.
Okay, when you planted it, did you remove the twine?
The
base.
Yeah, I know how to properly plant it.
And the burlap
sure
and the
root
wire basket.
The wire basket came off.
Yeah, it was actually in a container.
Okay.
That's something that, personally, I'm not a big fan of containerized trees because they often have girdling roots. which is roots that start to grow around the trunk of the tree and start
I'm familiar with that. And
okay.
I don't remember exactly, but I hope that I would have taken care of you know, pulling the roots out. And
they could also have circling roots. Another thing I want you to look at, do you have a lot of mulch around your plant?
Not a lot. You know, we usually use shredded leaves and, you know, just put a few inches every year and, you know not to put it around the trunk, you know, close
right.
around to the trunk.
All right. Is this an area that floods?
No.
Okay. Freeman is a combination of red and silver, and both red and silver are tolerant to some flooding, especially silver. Silver is very tolerant to flooding.
Also tends to be pretty resistant to verticillium, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, compared to other types of maples.
Interesting.
Unfortunate, but sorry. Sorry for those of you who love silver maple.
It's not,
okay.
You know, silver is not my favorite tree, but we wanted something that kind of would grow fast because we were afraid the Norway was on its way out.
Right. Okay. Another thing, you don't have the mulch touching the trunk of the tree. Okay. Do you have it staked?
No. And we never did because I don't really believe in that.
Okay. Because if the stake was still on, you know, staking material around the trunk of the tree, that can girdle a tree. Okay. It rules out a lot of things.
It sounds like you're doing a lot of things
right.
So we're dredging our minds here to think of what the problem might be.
Have you noticed any insect feeding or, I don't know if you're familiar with borer damage, holes in the trunk?
No, I haven't. I guess I haven't looked at the trunk. I've been looking at the leaves, and I've been listening to your program, and I've, you know, also noticed those little black things on the leaves this year that you were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
But I haven't really, haven't looked at the trunk, I guess.
Okay. Boy, I'm starting
Nothing pops out.
Yeah.
So do you think it just could be the moisture issue?
Well, you've had it for 5 years. It's established.
Yeah.
And we did have that horrible floods last year and the year before.
The soil in Mount Horeb has a lot of limestone close to the surface, so flooding usually isn't an issue. And, you know, we've never had a problem in our yard.
Okay.
Any sort of pH issues with that particular
tree? No, Freeman maple, it depends on the cultivar. Some cultivars are more tolerant to higher pH than others, but usually they're very easy to grow around here.
Yeah.
It's a native hybrid of red and silver, and they grow very fast.
Mm-hmm.
Are the leaves coming out chlorotic or twisted?
I don't think so.
Okay, do you have a lawn care company?
No.
Okay.
And we don't use any pesticides or anything
you've
like
got
that.
You've got a stump here.
We have a lawn full of creeping Charlie, so that's how much we take care of our lawn.
Okay, because one of the things I was thinking of is if somebody sprayed a herbicide near on the trunk of the tree. I've heard people spraying herbicide on the trunks of trees to control suckers. I don't recommend that at all. That will cause severe cankers to form on trunks of trees, and you may kill your tree. Boy, I'm running out of possibilities.
I've
probably
stumped, to speak.
Okay.
What you might want to do is, if you're interested, would be to. Do you have a digital camera?
I do, but I don't know how to email any pictures.
Okay.
Or anything.
Send a sample to you?
Yeah. Well, I was going to say probably the first. It'd be better if we could see some photos just to see how the tree looks in the landscape. Could you find somebody who could help you email those photos?
Probably could, yeah.
Okay. If you would be willing to do that, and what I can do is forward them on to Laura, I'll give you my email address. It's B as in boy, D as in David, H as in Harry, at plantpath, PLANTPATH dot WISC, short for Wisconsin, dot EDU. And it's sometimes if we see a picture of it, we'll be able to tell a little bit more.
All right.
Considering we're doing radio, this what we typically do is very visual. So sometimes the pictures do really help.
Do you have a gas line there?
No.
Okay.
No.
Propane tanks or anything of that sort nearby?
Oh, yeah. Freeman maple, they're susceptible to this.
Yeah. Do you have propane tanks or anything of that sort anywhere close?
Uh-uh.
Okay. All right.
Send a picture or
send a picture.
Send more than one.
Yeah, definitely. Take a series of pictures, kind of a landscape shot all the way closer to the tree so we can get a good sense of where the tree is in the landscape, what's around it, and exactly what it looks like.
And the trunk.
Okay. There you go, Darlene. There's an assignment for you.
Welcome to Diagnosis 101. This is what we go through every time.
This would be a good test question for my students.
Claude in La Crosse County. On to you. Hi, Claude.
Hi, good morning. I have a 25 to 30-year-old Colorado blue spruce. It's been a beautiful tree. I planted it originally. Two or three years ago, I added wood chips for mulch out to the drip line.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then this year, the thing looks very anemic. There's lots of new growth at the tips of the limbs, but inside of that, it looks pretty dead and pretty brown.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering if there's anything going around this year.
Well, you've got a Colorado blue spruce, which I've been quoted as saying is a dog of a tree. Don't get me wrong. I love Colorado blue spruce.
Yeah.
I think it's a lovely tree when it's healthy. Unfortunately, in Wisconsin, we don't see a lot of healthy Colorado blue spruce. And the most common disease that we see that will cause the sort of symptoms that you're talking about, where you have kind of browning of the interior needles, is something called rhizospira needle cast. It's rhizospira. It's a fungal disease. The fungus gets into those older needles. Actually, oftentimes the infections occur as the needles are originally emerging, and then the fungus kind of sits there, and when the needles get farther back in the canopy, then the fungus starts to be a problem. It'll cause a lot of needle thinning. There's also another fungus that we're seeing a little bit more of that mimics this rhizosphere. It's called Stigmina. Causes basically the same symptoms. And unfortunately, with Colorado blue spruce, they tend to be very susceptible to both of these diseases. And it's something you either kind of have to live with or just don't grow Colorado blue spruce. Or if you're going to grow a Colorado blue spruce, always make sure it's a single tree out kind of by itself so it gets really good airflow.
That's the way mine is. It's in my front yard.
But you also said it was about 30 years old. Was that correct?
25 to 30.
Yeah. And when you get to a tree that big, you get a lot of stagnant air in the interior of the canopy, and that creates just a great environment for these fungi to get established. And I typically start to see problems on blue spruce after about 10 to 15 years. So unfortunately, what you're going to end up with are green tips and then kind of bare branches. And you can do some pruning to make it look a little bit better, but that's about it at this point with a tree that large and that old.
Any spraying you could do?
No, not at this point. And I don't usually think of there are spray treatments, but I usually don't think of them being that effective. With a large tree, you've got to catch the disease before it arrives, before it occurs. Mm-hmm. And with a tree that large, you would have had to have done it way earlier than this, and you probably would have had to have a professional come in and do it for you.
Sorry.
I'm sorry about that.
But good luck, Claude. Thank you very much for calling. Nancy in Rock County, excuse me. You got a quick question for us.
Well, I hope this is an easier diagnostic question. I have some relatively young trees that are showing a green lichen-like crusty substance on the bark.
It's lichens.
Don't you lichen it?
Yeah, they're called lichens, and don't worry about those. Those are very, very cosmetic sorts of things. They're just using the tree as a surface to grow on.
No concern there. No, it's actually an indicator of good air quality.
If you have a lot of diverse sorts of lichens, that means your air quality is really good. And we do have a series of fact sheets on lichens if you're interested in checking them out and reading a little bit more. But no, definitely if you have other things to worry about those other things, not these little guys.
Well, my second question is I have found a caterpillar in just one little web. I'm sure you've talked about this before, but what is recommended for the webby problem?
Pull the webs out of the tree and dump them in some soapy water.
With some alcohol. So. And you don't need to spray any pesticides.
No.
Okay, that's what I was looking
for. Again,
thank you.
We've got a fact sheet on that as well if you want to check that out.
Great.
All right. And we should go back on just the Urban Horticulture website again. Mm-hmm. Will you, Brian?
It's www. What you start with is wihort.uwex.edu, and that has our complete listing of one-page fact sheets.
Perfect. Thank you both very much for being with me. You'll come back and do this again.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, soon.
Love doing the show.
This is fun.
All right. Laura Jellin is an associate professor and extension specialist for woody ornamentals in the UW-Madison Department of Horticulture. Brian Hoddleston, plant disease diagnostician with the Plant Disease Diagnostics Clinic at the UW-Madison. He's also with the University of Wisconsin Extension as well. So, again, that website, go back to that website. It's wihort.uwex.edu, and you're going to find out a lot of information that you're going to be able to, a lot of the fact sheets. That how many fact sheets are there, by the way? It must be
close to 190.
190 fact sheets or thereabouts.
Thereabouts.
and you can pull them right off. Thanks again to those folks. Thanks to everybody who called, by the way, as well. Just to let you know what's coming up on Monday, we'll be talking about personal computing. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison will be back again for one of his visits to talk about what's ailing your computer. In the meantime, thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.